B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
The big question this week is, how does WWE fix their issues? Two top stars from two different promotions will be headlining a huge card this summer. Is Brock Lesnar actually retired? And we'll tell you our favorite Money in the Bank matches and cash-in. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, WWE viewership is down on TV and live attendance is down. Both things have been going on for about a year now. The question I want to start with is, how does WWE fix this problem that they have? And I'll kind of answer my own question.
Yeah.
They have to start booking for long-term stories rather than this one great moment. And WWE has a history of drawing the most money when it's had a long build. Cena Rock, Hogan versus Savage. Even WCW built Sting versus Hogan for 18-ish months. One of the more recent stories in NXT was Gargano and Ciampa. That's a 3-year story arc. People also tend to forget that Steve Austin did his Austin 316 promo at King of the Ring 96 and didn't main event WrestleMania until 1998 at WrestleMania 14 in Boston, which you were at. So yep. I think this is something that WWE has to do, is focus on a longer term view rather than week to week moments.
Yeah. And you know what? It's time to, it's a downtime right now. And we've seen that with the ratings and, like you said, the attendance too. Maybe I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt here with the fact that, yes, it is after WrestleMania. We're officially a month out now. But still, you have to keep that hot hand going after WrestleMania. And we still have not really seen any momentum stay alive here. So Kofi Kingston, here's your example. He wins at WrestleMania. That's his moment right there. You talk about Stone Cold Steve Austin winning at WrestleMania 14, for that matter, too, when before that, you know, he had not headlined a WrestleMania. Do you feel confident with Kofi Kingston headlining another pay-per-view now that he is the WWE champion? Do you still feel momentum in his favor for that?
I feel like all three champions, all three babyface champions who won, have no momentum right now.
Yes, and that is a problem.
Becky, their story arc too soon.
Yep.
And the way that Becky won at WrestleMania was, I don't want to say mired in controversy, but there was an issue with that finish. Seth Rollins won the opening match, which was cool for the moment. And I'm looking forward to Seth Rollins versus AJ Styles, but I haven't gotten that hook for Seth Rollins yet. And with Kofi had that great moment at WrestleMania. But what have they done since with Kofi? He just had a great match on SmackDown with AJ and Sami Zayn, and he had a good match on Monday against Daniel Bryan, but Kofi hasn't gripped me. He hasn't gripped me as the champion, and which leads me to think that he's better as the chaser. So, you know, and this is something we'll talk about next week, is Kevin Owens should beat Kofi Kingston at Money in the Bank.
Absolutely.
And have Kofi chase again, or you bring Kofi back down to the Intercontinental U.S. title level.
Or the tag team, which is still, again, very desperate.
Or maybe Kofi will gain some momentum chasing Kevin Owens again, and that second reign will be the more defining reign, where he's more solidified. Maybe that's what they do.
Exactly. And you know what? I know we're going to talk about Brock Lesnar potentially returning here in a little bit too, but again, that star power, I love Kofi Kingston. I love Becky Lynch. I enjoy Seth Rollins' talent, but they don't do that much for me right now as champions. And the drive going into WrestleMania, the storytelling was better. Right now, we don't have that clear-cut storytelling as to what is going to be next for them and what they can achieve next, because it's a bad situation for them. And thankfully, Money in the Bank is, you know, next week. So that could help a little bit. But again, the build up to it, I'm still not feeling too much of it.
So is it their storytelling, or is it, I'm 38, I've seen everything in wrestling?
I think it's I might be the latter. I hate to say it. Like, we, and not just that, but we've seen really good stuff in wrestling. And not that it was, this is bad, but come on. We saw the Attitude Era. We saw the early 90s. We saw some great action. We saw some great promos when their swears were allowed. Right now, it's just...
Well, yeah. Mike, I mean, it's a whole different world now.
Absolutely.
Triple H
Absolutely.
Was dropping R words often.
And DX,
I shouldn't say often. He called Kane the big red R.
True.
On
this
Raw.
Is true.
And it was just a different standard.
And then also, you know, DX with the two words, they still get away with that a little bit. But yeah, it's a different scenario. Maybe the latter for that part, we have seen it. And sure, do I enjoy doing this? This is awesome. This is a blast doing this with you every week. I don't know how you feel about it. But
tell me what week it is and I'll have a different answer for you.
But I just, like, you know, thankfully we're getting paid to do this, which is great. I'm fine with that. If we weren't doing the podcast, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know if I'd be invested as I would be every week.
So I'm invested week to week because I generally like wrestling. I have my critiques of it. I have my nitpicks of it.
Ditto.
But I watch and I follow to enjoy it. And if I'm not enjoying WWE on a week, I have Ring of Honor. I have New Japan. I will have AEW. I have Impact. I have other options to enjoy professional wrestling. Otherwise, I don't have a lot of time these days as it is. So when I do invest my time in wrestling, it's got to be good. It's got to be worth my time.
Yeah, exactly.
And go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, you know, and just like, you know, it just seems like maybe in past, and it's just this time of year, like in here in Boston, we're very fortunate to have two teams in the playoffs. So very invested in the Bruins right now and the Celtics maybe for another game or whatever. We just had the NFL draft. There's a lot going on. I think my attention is fully on that, where if I weren't doing this on a week-to-week basis, I wouldn't be watching Raw and SmackDown and everything else for that matter, reading up on a lot of stuff. Probably take a little time off for at least another month until it's all complete when the teams are out. But I'm very fortunate. I'm blessed. Love this. Love what we're doing. And I have no regrets. But that's just maybe me feeling a little down on the product right now as it is not helping.
Well, Mike, realistically, you don't need to watch the week to week.
This is true.
There's nothing that they're doing week to week that should invest you and make you must watch. I don't think that's true for any of the current wrestling shows. I'm more interested in Ring of Honor's house shows because with that Honor Club thing, all their shows or almost all of their shows are filmed in live. I watched the Crockett Cup a few weeks ago and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the experience.
Yeah.
But that's not for everybody. But I'm also more into characters in the ring rather than here's a 15-minute promo where it sets up one match for later in the evening that I'm not really interested in. But it does beg this question, or it leads me to this question. And it's a question that I admit I don't have an answer for, which I hate that, especially when we're doing we're doing a talk show about wrestling, right?
I know. Yeah.
So
yep.
Here's the question.
Yep.
Who do you push for that long-term superstar?
Yeah, and right now I think that's the question WWE is trying to answer too. But I think the answer is right there, and it's Becky Lynch because she has, you know, Becky Two Belts. They're branding that around her. She beat Ronda Rousey and Charlotte at WrestleMania, and it's just
But she kind of didn't.
I know, but now, you know, it's still.
And now she's got two fights.
I know. That's the problem. And,
right? So now you're overexposing Becky because you've got her on two shows.
Right, right. So.
And now they have this stupid wild card thing. So now AJ Styles and Kofi Kingston are working two shows. Roman's working two shows, which.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is a question that one of my friends posed to me. What's the main event for SummerSlam right now?
I mean, if they have it at Money in the Bank, I would have had AJ versus Seth Rollins. I would have, wouldn't you?
So I joked with him. Yeah, I would have built to that. I would have given AJ a little bit of a longer term to build to a villain character.
Yep.
But I joked with my friend. I'm like, well, isn't it Brock Lesnar versus Goldberg for the WWE title?
I knew it. Yep. But it was only a matter of time before that name was dropped. And right? You know what? I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with Brock Lesnar back. I really am.
So, like, and that was a fine match in Orlando, but that was really Bill Goldberg's perfect ending. And he's exactly. coming back because WWE's insecure, lowercase spelling on insecure. But if I'm looking at, like, SummerSlam, right? We don't know what the main event for SummerSlam is. I'm looking at WrestleMania 36. Mm-hmm. Roman Reigns is going to be in that main event.
Yes.
And who he's fighting, I don't know. But you look at the... I was doing a little digging on, like, first opportunities at championships or first opportunities at main events, right? So,
yep.
So Kofi wins the WWE title. He's 37.
Yep.
John Cena won his first title at 28. Roman was 30 when he had his first main event at WrestleMania 31. Hulk Hogan was 31 when he beat The Sheik in 84. And so this roster is really old.
It is old. I mean, Brock Lesnar, I think, was what, 23, 24?
Brock and Randy Orton were both 22, 23. They were at the time that they won, the youngest champion of WWE's history. Orton won the world. Brock won the WWE. But at the time that they won their championships, they were the youngest.
Yeah, and I believe The Rock was pretty young, too, when he won his
The Rock was pretty young. But there's no...
But you're right. It's an old...
I mean, I'd put the title on Kevin Owens again, but he's 33.
Yeah.
Right? Seth Rollins is 31-ish.
Right.
So you're right in that range where people kind of get that prime run with it.
Yep.
But if you're looking a little bit longer term... Like, you got somebody who we're fond of in Donovan Dijak, who checks a lot of the boxes that Vince likes.
Mm-hmm.
He's 32, and he hasn't sniffed a title match in NXT.
Nope.
So then you go, well, I look at Velveteen Dream, who's 23, and he checks a lot of Vince's boxes, except he's awesome. A little thin in the upper body, I would say.
Yep.
So maybe he doesn't check all the boxes, but he's somebody that you could protect going forward. And then I look at this one, and this is going to make everybody groan. Lars Sullivan.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
He's 30 years old, and he's 6'3", and he's 330. He's built like a tank.
And when I saw the little backstage he and Vince had this week on Raw, it just, I had the same exact thought you did, very similar, I think, is that, okay, this guy's getting the push. Vince looking at him, and sure, he's, a little perplexed with the act, but deep down in the back of his mind, he's got cha-ching, 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 money. And that is the guy. You know, it's the size right there. It's kind of like a Brock Lesnar physique, Jimmy, wouldn't you say?
So Brock's a little bit more built, and Brock's got the better amateur background, so it gives him credibility. And Brock also looks better than I think Lars Sullivan does in a suit.
I'll give you that, yep.
But the point is the same, is that when you see Lars Sullivan, when you see Brock Lesnar, when you see some of the guys in the airport, you turn your head and you go, oh, wow, what's that?
Yeah.
But yep, tell me Lars Sullivan's best promo.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
But I facilitate this discussion because one of the big criticisms of WWE is, well, why does Vince always go back to Brock Lesnar? Why does he always go back to Roman Reigns? Well, it's who he believes in.
And Charlotte Flair.
And hey. Charlotte Flair should be on top. I can't wait until she wins another championship and the internet cries about it. I'm here for Charlotte Flair's victories.
And you're going to be at Money in the Bank, right?
I am.
So you might see Charlotte win the nine-time.
So if you remember my reactions from NXT in Brooklyn, New York, but it was Brooklyn. I mean, they're going to be 10 times if Charlotte wins the championship.
Go look at Jimmy on the WWE Network. It is priceless.
It is funny.
But
the point about Vince is, and this is true of most promoters, when the Ultimate Warrior failed in WrestleMania 6, Vince went back to Hogan for WrestleMania 7. When Ric Flair had his issues with the WWF Championship, Vince went to Savage. Those are proven known draws to him. And it's only when he didn't have Hogan or Savage that he went to Bret Hart. And then on the villain side of things, Yokozuna was a villain for a long time as champion because Vince had nothing else. And it really wasn't until 1999 when Triple H was on his upward push that WWE kind of transitioned from its historically babyface company into a villain company. Billy Graham and Yokozuna were really the exceptions of his 40-year run of babyface champions at the top of WWE. And Cena, franchise player, had a long run as WWE champion. John Cena has been champion for the fourth most number of days in the history of the company. And that's why he's in that upper echelon. But maybe that's the problem. WWF for all those years was a babyface territory. And maybe the fans are now tired of watching the good guy chase the bad guy. But if that were the case, then the viewership wouldn't have dropped as much as it did after WrestleMania because Vince gave everybody the clean sweep of good guy wins. So you're stuck in this peril of you're a babyface company. You had all the babyfaces win and your viewership is going down.
Right. And it's not, it's full circle again. And just to back to where you were saying with Vince going to the Brock Lesnar and to Charlotte Flair and to John Cena and all those guys, it's his comfort zone. So it's his security blanket, the ones he can trust. And I don't think, to go back to our original topic of conversation here, who's that next guy to maybe carry the torch or be that superstar? He still doesn't know. So for him not to have that answer, that's why he has to keep going back to guys that have solidified their role in the company as a top performer, as a champion, and someone who he can trust to, be that winner right there, be that champion to be comfortable to where they can be in a main event status and a potential main event of pay-per-view.
One of those people that Vince might not have after WrestleMania in Tampa is Brock Lesnar, who Dana White claimed that Brock Lesnar told him he's retiring from fighting and wouldn't be taking on any championship fights that have been offered to him. There was another report that Brock Lesnar told Vince WrestleMania 36 in Tampa he's done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one less person.
It's not like he's dropping a bomb on him 24 hours in advance here. So if that's the case, he's 24 hours in advance. He has a full year to plan ahead. So obviously you get a great development in NXT. You got guys that are on the main roster right now who you can try to develop. Maybe someone that is already out there, Braun Strowman, who they did throw away, not give him a chance.
36.
I know. But still, though.
Tell me Braun's best promo. Because I don't think he's had mic time since before the Rumble.
It's been weak. It's disappointing. You know, it's just something along those lines right there where you have a full year to prepare for it. And if you can't figure that out between now and next April, now less than a year, 11 months, I mean, well, let's be a little more hypothetical here. Probably about 6 months, maybe 9 going into the Royal Rumble, wouldn't you say, right after Royal Rumble?
Yeah, and ironically enough, Brock Lesnar gave Vince a year of booking ideas.
Oh, my gosh. So I just think that if you got to go to Brock Lesnar and if he's going to retire in Tampa, good for him. He has earned that. And I think it would totally make sense for him to go into the Hall of Fame the year after when it's in Hollywood.
So Brock Lesnar's career overall is really interesting. He's champion like 5 months into his call-up. He's main eventing WrestleMania about a year after his call-up. And a year after that, he's gone for 8 years. And then he comes back, loses to Cena, has a program with Triple H, beats the Undertaker streak, and is one of the most hated people in wrestling because Vince keeps paying him money to work less. Like, that's his fault.
And you know what his career kind of reminds me of a little bit, if you're basing it on championships, and I'm not putting them in the same sentence ever again, but I will for this matter, it's Tom Brady. Tom Brady wins 3 out of 4 Super Bowls at the very early stage of his career. You go 10 years without one. So here you go. The 8 years Brock Lesnar is out. He tries to do football, UFC, and so forth. Comes back, dominates, shocks the world with The Undertaker. And now, you know, here you are in the Brady scenario. He's won 3 Super Bowls on the tail end of his career for what we think. And Brock Lesnar's kind of done that thing, main eventing WrestleManias. And then, like I said, shocked the world, beat The Undertaker, WrestleMania 30. And just kind of carry that torch there as the Universal Champion for such a while, even though he was not a full-time champion.
I mean, in the wrestling sense, the 8-year gap is germane. But he went to UFC and not only became their champion, he also was a consistent pay-per-view draw. I could Google it, but I don't want to because I want to see if I know it off the top of my head. I think he had $5 million buy rate shows.
Five $1 million buy rate shows?
Yes, which at the time for UFC. So, and again, that's, I think, why Vince keeps going back to him.
I'm going to check that right now.
He was a big draw in the UFC, and that's why they fought to bring him back. And
he had three $1 million dollar buy rates. But the other two were 6 figures, though, obviously.
Okay, so I lose under Price is Right rules.
No, but, I mean, you were close. 900,000 was one, and then 535,000 was the last, or the lowest, rather.
But Brock left WWE, did football, failed at football, went to New Japan, won the IWGP Championship, did UFC, drew a lot of money, won championships there, came back to WWE, and really dominated the scene.
Dominated.
And what's interesting to me is he does this whole part-time schedule thing, which is what somebody else is doing recently, but we like this person that I'm going to mention.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho.
I knew it. Yeah.
Right? But we like Chris Jericho, even though he does the music thing most of the year, but he comes back for enough matches. So, Mike, here's a fastball right down the plate.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why do we like Chris Jericho and hate Brock Lesnar when they do essentially the same thing?
Well, I was going to say, who's we?
It's the royal we.
All right, fine. I'll give it to you. I like Jericho. He's not my favorite. I'm going to talk about him a little, yes. But I just think he's got more connection with the audience, and he can talk on the microphone, Jimmy, right? He can actually do a promo. Brock Lesnar can't. He has Paul Heyman do it. Nothing against him to have one of the greatest mic talents of all time do that for you. But he is the, you know, not Lex Luger, but yes, he is the total package. He can talk. He can wrestle. He can perform. He's everything, Chris Jericho. Brock Lesnar is not. He's a specimen in the ring, but nothing on the microphone.
So I think it's actually, there's greater detail in that Brock Lesnar is perceived as a hired mercenary, and Chris Jericho is perceived as the longtime wrestling fan because he got his photo taken with Ricky Steamboat at a young age. He came up through New Japan, All Japan, ECW, WCW, WWF.
Yep.
And fans feel like he's earned the right to be a 10-match-a-year worker as opposed to Brock Lesnar, who came up as a championship amateur wrestler, was in the developmental system with the greatest class of him, Batista, John Cena, Randy Orton, Shelton Benjamin. And from the get-go was pushed as a main event player and then turned into a mercenary because supposedly the reason why he left WWF to begin with was he didn't want to lose after his run at the top. And so whether that's actually true or not, that became what was attached to Brock Lesnar. And so Brock Lesnar went into the UFC world, proved that he could beat everybody up, and then essentially through dirt sheets, news reports, it became, oh, well, Brock will do whatever you want for the highest price.
Made a lot of money.
And Jericho left because he was creatively burnt out. He did some books. He still was a favorite, per se, in the eyes of wrestling fans. And everything that he's touched, when he came back and did the Nick Bockwinkle gimmick against Shawn Michaels in 08, that was some fabulous work.
That's very good.
And you get Brock Lesnar, who shows up when he wants and doesn't do that type of stuff. It's just a car crash of a match, whether it's Samoa Joe, whether it's a four-way match with Roman, Joe, and Braun at SummerSlam, whether it's a match with Goldberg. It's more like momentary matches, even though that Goldberg-Brock Lesnar story was a good one. Goldberg's got Brock's number. That's something easily identifiable. I think how they ruined that, they being WWE, they being Vince, was they had Goldberg beat Kevin Owens and make Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship because Vince felt like he needed it. And if you listen to Chris Jericho's podcast, it was a matter of saving a step. And Chris Jericho was going to beat Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship in Orlando and then lose it the next month to Brock Lesnar at Backlash. So they just eliminated that step in putting the Universal title on Goldberg before Mania and then transferring it to Brock.
And yeah, exactly. And just making it, you know, Brock Lesnar as that powerhouse kind of guy right there. And, you know, for Jericho to be where he is, I just think he has more of a connection with the fans, as you said, more or less, and his talent. It's just everything is more like a regular guy. He's a fan. And Brock Lesnar is, you know, he's a mastodon. He is a dangerous guy. He does not connect. He's not a guy you sit down and have a drink with at the bar. You know, Chris Jericho is more or less a guy you could do that with. He's more of a connection.
I'm not so sure about that. Well, and here's why I say that. Because we have a mutual friend who went to a Fozzie show when WrestleMania was in New Orleans. And it's supposed to be watch WrestleMania with Fozzie. And they're on the other side of the bar while the fans are on a different side of the bar.
Okay, that's in a real-life situation. But for the character, how they want you to perceive Chris Jericho, that's how they want you to think he's actually not a bad guy, where Brock Lesnar is one guy you want to run for the hills from. But yes, that's why and that's why I look at him a little more negative now after hearing about that with the New Hampshire story when he was at Hampton Beach for the WrestleMania 34 pay-per-view party up there.
Wait, so this isn't real life?
Well, I mean, you know, if the character doesn't, you know, if you're watching Chris Jericho as the character, wouldn't you be okay to be like, hey, let's go have a drink. Let's shoot the breeze. Talk shop.
I've been blessed to have been in Chris Jericho's presence twice in my life. And both times he couldn't have been nicer to me and more engaging and all that stuff.
Okay.
But so if you're going to watch WrestleMania with Fozzy, you should actually watch with Fozzy, not behind a velvet rope. Just
saying. That's what I said, too. That's what I said, too. And that's why I mean, I'm not going to judge him. Never met the guy. Don't know. I can't, you know, say I've shook his hand or whatever. But from what I heard from other people, it didn't sound too good.
And I bring up Chris Jericho because there was an announcement, and this got me really excited. It's going to be Okada versus Jericho for New Japan's Dominion, Mike. And this is a dream matchup. So they essentially, Jericho appeared in a video following Okada's successful title defense the other night on a New Japan show. Jericho's calling himself the Painmaker. He said at Dominion he's going to take the IWGP Championship from Okada. He repeatedly said that he would win as the video ended. Fabulous video. I'm geeked up. This match for me really doesn't need a story because these are two of the best performers that I've seen in the last few years. And, you know, I'm going to be, once again, Dominion, June 9th, Japan. I don't know whether it's Saturday or Sunday, but whatever it is, I'll be up at 5 in the morning. I'll be watching this match live on New Japan World, and I'm excited for it. I'm really excited for it. It's a dream matchup.
Yeah, that's an early Sunday morning one. And you know what? Just seeing Chris Jericho's video there, too, it's kind of like a mix of Slash from Guns N' Roses and Papa Shango with the makeup on him. And, you know, here we are, a perfect opportunity. As we know, he just signed on with AEW, able to do other promotions, too. And sure, we know that AEW's big event is coming up at the end of May. So great cross promotion right there to Jericho and Okada's match in June. Genius. Genius move here by Jericho and to what they can offer here for Okada. That's going to be a good one to watch. I'm excited for that too, Jimmy.
Well,
June 9th.
So this is interesting because in a 3-week span, he's got Kenny Omega and Okada.
Yep. That's awesome.
And indirectly, I have to think that they telegraphed the finish of Double or Nothing with Omega. Because I don't think that they would have Chris Jericho lose to Kenny Omega and then walk in and lose to Okada. Now, maybe I'm wrong. And I thought Jericho was winning this match anyway. Because then it evens up the series of Kenny Omega there at 1-1.
So
I think that they've telegraphed this one.
I could see him getting the clean finish on both.
You think Jericho's going to beat Okada?
I could see that happening. I mean, he's the guy that came out to challenge him, and you know what? Then that just sets up more of a rival and more matches for it for Okada to get back at Jericho. That would be awesome. I'd love to see Jericho beat him.
And I remember last year at Dominion when Jericho won against Naito. He won the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, and I was stunned because I thought Jericho was going to put over Kenny Omega, have this fight, and then, you know, be done with New Japan because he had just done the Saudi Arabia show for WWE, or he was doing it. One of the two. My timeline is off. And then he won.
Oh, that was a casket match we were supposed to have with The Undertaker, right?
Yes, and then it got moved around to they're paying him a bleep ton of money to be the 50th entrant in the greatest Royal Rumble,
right?
Which, hey, Vince loves his money right now. So but I still don't think that Jericho's going to win, but I love the idea that he's going to win just because the New Japan title, the IWGP title, has been a hot potato the last 6 months. And that thing needs some stability because Okada had an over 700-day run with it, and now it's just been bouncing around.
Bouncing around and put it on. I mean, the name, Chris Jericho, I mean, that's awesome right there. It just gives you more power to it.
And you blend him into All Elite Wrestling. And
absolutely.
It works on a lot of different levels to actually do it. But then you think about actually doing it, and so you're going to have – and this, I believe, would be the first time in New Japan history where you would have three consecutive... Actually, no, because Okada just successfully defended it. But you would have had three consecutive champions with zero successful title defenses.
Wow.
And to put that in perspective, when it flipped from Omega to Tanahashi and then Tanahashi to Jay White and then Jay White back to Okada, that was only the second time since 1990 where Vader and I can't remember who it is had where you had two straight champions with zero successful title chance defenses.
Really? Okay.
So it's a historical thing.
Wow. Okay. I want to look that up. Who was Vader 1990? You said with the New Japan Championship.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about this.
It was like Vader and.
It wasn't was Foley over there at that time?
No. Maybe it was Scott Norton.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
No. It might have been Fujinami.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. Well, long story short, yeah, I think that would just it spices it up for the whole Riki Choshu. Choshu.
So I have Googled it, and
I got Choshu and then Fujinami right
so
after that.
So December 26, 1990, Fujinami had zero successful defenses, and then Vader had zero successful defenses until it went back to Fujinami.
There you go. Okay. So, again, just for Jericho to have that on there, I mean, AJ Styles has held the title. Like you said, Omega, Okada, so many, Vader, and then add Chris Jericho to that list. That's a big thing. Brock Lesnar even had it, too, for a very short period amount of time.
He might have been the first person ever to win in a three-way match.
Yeah, if it was not the first, he did win in a three-way, yes. So... that's where I think that this is an awesome thing for the promotion when you have the caliber of future Hall of Famer Chris Jericho to have the title around him just builds up more stability for your promo. It's awesome. He's going to win, Jimmy. Book it.
I'd love to see it.
Telling you right now.
Absolutely,
book it,
would love to see it. Just because I'm here for successful Chris Jericho. I have two things before we wrap up here.
Let's do it.
I want to ask what your favorite Money in the Bank match was and your favorite cash-in for Money in the Bank.
Now, the cash-in did not necessarily have to be the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So my favorite Money in the Bank match was at WrestleMania 24, CM Punk. And this was back in 2008. It was actually a really good talent in that match. Jericho was in there, Shelton Benjamin, Carlito, Mr. Kennedy, John Morrison, and Carlito. Just everything loaded with talent. And I just thought so much athleticism. CM Punk, before he became that real, you know, top shelf superstar, right up to his exit, it was kind of like maybe the beginning of what we were to see, a foreshadow.
So this was Orlando or this was Detroit?
Orlando.
Okay.
WrestleMania 24.
So the thing that stands out to me from that Orlando was Matt Hardy costing MVP the briefcase.
He did. He gave him a spear, right?
I think MVP had his fingertips on the ladder, and then Matt Hardy comes out of nowhere and costs MVP the match.
Yes, but just the whole moment, though, for me, remembering it, was CM Punk, and that was the beginning, the seed that was planted for what we were to see for years to come with him. That was my favorite. I just loved all of that talent in there. I'm sure you're going to say the one with 21 as well. That was my favorite. That was another very close second for me with Edge. But my favorite cash-in, though, it wasn't too long ago, and I'm going to have to go with Dean Ambrose back in 2016 in Las Vegas, if you remember that right there. And actually, Jimmy, you interviewed him the day after, right?
I remember it very well.
Yeah. Okay.
And so here's the story. I don't know if I've shared this publicly.
Yeah.
I got a call from WWE on Friday asking if I would be interested in talking to Dean Ambrose on Monday. And I said, yeah, sure, of course, I'd love to. And I turned to Billy Lanny, after I got that phone call, Billy Lanny, who produces Felger and Maz with me, and I said, I'm talking to Dean Ambrose on Monday. So he's got to be doing something special on Sunday night at the Money in the Bank show. And so he wins the briefcase, and this was when this was the first time or the second time that they started bleeding over 11 o'clock.
Right.
And there was, I think there was a playoff game that night. And I remember, you know, we all do the two TV things now.
Oh yeah.
So I had Money in the Bank. He wins the briefcase and I go, well, I'm going to stay up for this one because otherwise I was going to go to bed. And because Seth and it was Seth and Roman in the main event and I didn't care who was going to win.
Right.
So I stayed up. I watched Seth win and I hear Ambrose's music hit and I went, there you go. I'm going to get to talk to the WWE champion the next day. Ambrose comes in, Dirty Deeds, 1, 2, 3. And he was, if I remember correctly, and maybe I'll pull it and I'll put it on the end of this podcast. Ambrose drove home. He was 10 minutes from his house. He slept in his own bed.
And that was the first WWE pay-per-view at the brand new T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. So, yeah, I just thought that it was, you know, Dean Ambrose was in that Money in the Bank match earlier in the night. It was also Jericho was in there. Another one with Jericho. Kevin Owens, Del Rio,
Jericho
Cesaro.
Created the match.
Yes, he did. He did. And
as you know, Jericho will tell you.
Well, you've heard him say it many times. Jericho, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, all those guys were in there. And, you know, here he is later in the night, you know, very similar to what Seth Rollins did to Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 31. He does it to his old Shield partner right there, shocking him and winning the WWE Championship, cashing in at Money in the Bank 2016. That's my favorite cash-in. My favorite Money in the Bank match was WrestleMania 24 with CM Punk. Also a very close second as well. I did say the Edge one, but in Boston with John Cena 2 in 2014. But that's what I have for that. How about yourself, Jimmy?
So my favorite Money in the Bank match was when Seth Rollins won in Boston.
Okay.
And here's the reason why, is outside of the Matt Hardy costing MVP the Money in the Bank contract, off the top of my head, I could not think of a better Money in the Bank match because I've seen so many ladder matches. I've seen so many of these matches that outside of like really thinking about it and thinking of CM Punk winning in Orlando and the story that MVP should have won that year and Matt Hardy costing it, I couldn't think of a better one. So I admit building bias. And when I say building bias, I was in the building for it. And that story, as I remember it, was Seth and Dean, the Shield had just broken up, and Seth and Dean were feuding, and they were the big part of this match. And it was Kane who was going to help Seth Rollins win the case because this whole corporate thing with Triple H, Stephanie, the Authority, that thing. But there are two things that really stood out in my mind about this match. And I probably don't remember it as well as I think I do, but I remember Kofi climbing the ladder and the Boston crowd getting behind Kofi. And it's in my mind, I'm like, oh, Kofi's going to win. Good for Kofi. Wouldn't have expected that one. And he didn't. And people seemed accepting of Seth Rollins winning. But the story was really Dean versus Seth in amongst this multi-person match where a future WWF title shot is on the line. The other participants in the match were Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and Rob Van Dam. And this was one of Van Dam's first matches back, I believe, in this run with the company. So that was my favorite match. And I freely admit it's because I didn't remember a whole bunch of them. And I didn't want to go back and start watching Money in the Bank matches and all that stuff. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to see if I could do it off the top of the dome. My favorite cash-in was CM Punk on Jeff Hardy at Extreme Rules. This was after Punk won his second briefcase in Detroit. And the reason why I like this one so much is because it turned CM Punk into a villain.
Yep.
And CM Punk for a long time was a babyface without a country. In other words, he was just kind of like there. Like, he had won the first case and he cashed in on Edge because Batista helped him. And then I don't think he ever lost the title. I think they eliminated him from a multi-person scramble match because they wanted to put it on Jericho, but they didn't want Punk to win and da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
So what this did was, and this is why maybe Kofi's second title run will be a better run, because I thought Punk, when he won the world title the second time, really amped up his game. So Jeff Hardy had just defeated Edge in a ladder match for the world title, the big gold belt.
Yep.
So Jim Ross is getting in the ring to do an interview, and this is if I remember it correctly. And Punk's music hits, and everybody's confused because Punk's a good guy.
Right.
And he comes out, and Jeff Hardy's hunched in the corner, like in pain, clutching at the world title. And Punk's like, no, 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 I'm cashing in. Ring the bell. Ring the bell. Let's go. Get him on his feet. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I think Punk hit the GTS. Jeff Hardy kicked out. I'm like, oh, no. They're going to have Punk blow the briefcase.
Yep.
And then I think Punk did something. There might have been like an inside cradle or something. Punk kicked out, and then he had another GTS. And I think he hooked both legs and arms and pinned him and won his second title. But what this all facilitated was CM Punk really digging into a straight edge personality and somewhat claiming to be morally better than Jeff Hardy because of all of Jeff Hardy's demons.
Right.
And this was at the end of Jeff Hardy's contract, I believe. But it was also, it was the seeds being planted for the Straight Edge Society, which if you weren't watching SmackDown at the time, this was worth your time. There was nothing on either program that I think could touch what the Straight Edge Society promos were doing.
Yeah, and that was a pretty good time with all that right there. And I forgot about that with that cash in there because CM Punk, it was confusion. And yeah, to have a situation like that when you know once they win that shock factor right there and turn your whole character, you're in for something special for the long run. So really good job by CM Punk to be able to, one, cash in, and then two, be able to change his whole character for everyone else to make him the heel, which we know him best as, the heel CM Punk.
And the blessing for him was that he was on SmackDown at the time Vince wasn't really paying attention to SmackDown. So
that's true, yeah.
I want to close this week with kind of a sad note. The local sports world in Boston lost a family member. Andy Jick was the longtime Celtics and Boston College public address announcer. He passed away suddenly over the weekend. Now, I never met Andy, but Mike, he was a friend of yours, and you told me that he was a regular listener to this podcast and kind of a quiet wrestling fan.
He was, and I'll tell you right now, Jimmy, he liked the old-fashioned wrestling best. In fact, do you remember the Monday Night Raw you and I were at the SummerSlam go-home show in 2017 in Boston?
Yeah, that was Sasha Banks tapped out Nia Jax. They did a Shield fist reunion.
Yes.
And they did the Hardys and Balor in a six-man match, I think.
Right. You know, and Andy was a big wrestling fan, old school one, but he told me he was going to be at that Monday Night Raw. And I was like, no kidding. And, you know, he asked me some stuff, what to expect. And I gave him the whole lowdown. He had no idea what I was talking about. So I remember I texted him during the show and I asked him, what did you think? What do you think of this? It was like 2 hours into the 3 hour program. And he said, oh, I just got home. I was all set. I'm watching it on my couch now. I'm like, why? He just really had no desire to be there. He goes, I saw the glory days of it. I don't want to see the rest of it. I don't want to ruin my vision of professional wrestling. So I decided to go home after that. So he gave the tickets to someone else to move up there. I was like, wow. But Andy did, he knew of us and the whole intrigue of professional wrestling. And he did share with me that he did listen to it or on his daily walk or a couple of day walk around Jamaica Pond and also in the Newton, Massachusetts area where he resided. said, I don't know too much what you're talking about, but I want to support you guys. And I appreciated that. But like you said, Jimmy, longtime voice of the Boston Celtics at the Boston Garden. Fans got to know him through that during the Larry Bird Big Three era, Boston College athletics as well. Great turnout at his funeral service today. Unbelievable, a lot of big name people that were there. And it was a really nice tribute to a great guy who lived a great life. Taken a little too soon, but you know what? He really had a good life, and that is nothing to have any regrets about. And we'll miss you, Andy Jick. We love you.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Next week, Joe Murray will join us from the Over Under 98.5 podcast for our Money in the Bank preview. And Joe's going to have some good prop bets for us.
And what was his response when we said, can you do it? And what did Joe say?
In.
Yes. So he is in, and you better be too.
For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. And we'll do Money in the Bank preview next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.